If it wasn't for them, I'd be singing a cappella up here. So hallelujah for you two, all right? Hello, everybody. Happy Sunday. Elizabeth Gilbert, the author that's famous for Eat, Pray, Love, once said about herself, "I was born terrified of everything." And then she goes on to tell of a trip that she took with her family to the beach when she was a young child. And she was so terrified of the waves that she told her parents, "You've got to go tell all these people to stay away from the water." Okay? I can so relate to her because I'm a fellow fraidy cat. Fear has been a big issue all of my life, and I'm sure it was for the people that John was writing to in the book of John, which we're going through here on Sunday mornings, because at the time of this writing, right around the time that the book of John was written, there was a famine that had taken place. There was widespread oppression and persecution of Jesus' followers, and there was a bunch of false teachers wandering around. So it was a scary time in their existence. And look at what John writes to them in John chapter 10 and John chapter 11. We're going to skip through a little bit on this. "Therefore Jesus said again, 'Very truly I tell you, I am the gate for the sheep. All who have come before me are thieves and robbers, but the sheep have not listened to them. I am the gate. Whoever enters through me will be saved. They will come in and go out and find pasture. The thief comes only to steal and kill and destroy. I have come that they might have life and have it to the fullest.'" Now, skipping down a little bit in John chapter 10. "I am the good shepherd. I know my sheep and my sheep know me. Just as the Father knows me and I know the Father, and I lay down my life for the sheep. I have other sheep that are not of this sheep pen. I must bring them also." Jesus is very inclusive here. "They too will listen to my voice, and there shall be one flock and one shepherd." Now move into John chapter 11, and the setting for this is a funeral. "Lord," Martha said to Jesus, "if you had been here, my brother, Lazarus, would not have died. But I know that even now God will give you whatever you ask." Jesus said to her, "Your brother will rise again." There's an amazing thing to say at a funeral. Martha answered, "I know he will rise again in the resurrection at the last day." Jesus said to her, "I am the resurrection. I am the resurrection and the life. The one who believes in me will live even though they die. And whoever lives by believing in me will never die." Do you actually believe this? In these verses, Jesus is making three remarkable I am statements. He makes a lot of them in the book of John. And he makes these statements so people can come to a fuller understanding and appreciation of who he really is. But I noticed something this week in studying for this message. These three I am statements actually help us to deal with three particular fears that plague a lot of people that are scaredy cats just like me. So I want to go through these three I am statements and the fears that coincide with them. First one is this: I am the gate. A couple of things about this statement. Most of the time when people hear that nowadays, they think that Jesus is saying, "Well, I'm the gate. I'm the entrance into heaven." That assumption totally misses the point, because rabbis like Jesus at this time spent little to no time at all thinking about the hereafter. They spent all of their time thinking about and teaching about the here and now. That's what they focused on. So I believe when Jesus says, "I am the gate," he's actually saying something else. He's saying, "I am the entrance into a way of life, a fullness of life that starts right here, right now." I love C.S. Lewis, and he has this quote on beauty, and I'll tell you what it has to do with this point, but let's read this, pop it up on the screen. "We do not want merely to see beauty, though God knows even that is bounty enough. We want something else which can hardly be put into words, to be united with the beauty we see, to pass into it, to receive it into ourselves, to bathe in it, to become a part of it." Oh, I love that quote, and I believe Jesus is using these words, "I am the gate," to invite us all to not just know about his way of life, but to step into it, to step into the beauty of his way of life and have that beauty come inside of us too. But there's more to this statement, and here's where it has to do with fear and protection. Specifically this fear, the fear of bad things happening to us. Some of us are so afraid, and people I talk to are so afraid of bad things happening to them, they can't even enjoy the good stuff that happens to them. Their thoughts are like, well, I just got this great job. But what if I do something stupid and get fired? They instantly go to the bad stuff happening. Or they say, well, my baby was born and it's so beautiful and healthy, but what if my baby grows up to be weird? Okay, so they do that. We spend so much time freaking out about what if, we actually can't enjoy what is. So what can help us? Well, I'll give you the answer to that, but I want to start by telling you a story. I was reading recently of a shepherd in the Holy Land, and she's a 15-year-old girl that's the shepherd of this flock for a Bedouin tribe in the Holy Land. And an author followed her around to see what the life of a shepherd was like. And she tended to the sheep all day, and at nighttime, she took this flock, and it was a large one, into a public sheep pen, which was a rock wall, made out of a rock wall. And the entrance to this, the gate to the sheep pen, was actually just a low point in the rock wall. So she had all the sheep hop over that, and then she took all of her belongings and she camped out at the low point in the wall to protect the sheep from any predators that might try to get in. So the gate wasn't this, we picture Jesus saying, I am the gate. The gate wasn't this wooden door that you went through into the sheep pen. The gate was the girl. The girl was the gate, okay? And she was the protection for the sheep. Because of our fears, we might convince ourselves that Jesus is doing a bad job at the whole protection gate thing, right? Because people all around us are getting sick, they're getting hurt, they're getting rejected, they're dying, they're being killed. Has Jesus fallen asleep at the post? We're tempted to think that. I don't believe so at all. Look at this verse out of Psalm 121. I lift up my eyes to the mountain. Where does my help come from? My help comes from the Lord, the maker of heaven and earth. He will not let our foot slip. He who watches over you will not slumber. Indeed, he who watches over Israel will neither slumber nor sleep. Well, that kind of shoots down the whole Jesus might be afraid of sleep at the post notion, right? I've told you before, I believe with all of my heart, we all have this infinite and indestructible core, this holy and unhurtable part deep within ourselves that will remain unharmed by violence and neglect and addiction and injustice and oppressive religion and any other bad thing that might come our way. Trouble will definitely affect our circumstances. It does on a weekly basis, and it will definitely affect even our bodies. But our core won't be damaged, because that is under the constant protection of Jesus, and he never sleeps or slumbers. He's not asleep at the gate. I'm 60 now, and I grew up listening to Bob Dylan, and Bob Dylan's best song, in my personal opinion, is Shelter from the Storm, and because I love that phrase, because that's how I view Jesus. I view Jesus as our shelter from the storm, and in a way, I got to tell you, I'm actually thankful for my fear of bad things happening to me. I'm actually thankful for that fear because it reminds me of how much I need God. I could never be my own gate, but I don't have to be. Jesus is my gate. Jesus is our gate. Or if you like to think of it in my way, Jesus is our shelter from the storm. All right, let's move on to the second I am statement. Jesus says, I am the good shepherd. I think we all struggle with this particular fear that I struggle with mightily at times. The fear of feeling insignificant. I struggle with that. I want to matter. At the end of my life, I don't want my epitaph to read, here lies Tim Johnson, so what? Okay, I don't want that to be on my, I don't want that to be on my gravestone. But because Jesus is our good shepherd, that fear gets dissipated, it dissolves, and let me explain. In verse 3, Jesus says, the sheep listen to his voice, and he calls them by name. That is huge. Maybe some of you, if you're like me, I grew up in Pleasant Hill, graduated from there, so we're kind of out in the country. But 4-H projects, farm animal projects, were really popular. Maybe some of you raised a 4-H animal, let's say a pig for 4-H. Well, you would go get this pig, you would purchase the pig or get the pig given to you, and you would raise it up, and instantly, if your parents were wise, The first thing they would tell you about raising this pig is, don't name the pig. Don't name the pig. From here on, you're just going to call it the pig. Because they knew if you named it, you would become attached to it, okay? It would matter to you. It would no longer be the pig, it would be Pearl or Hoover or whatever you decided to name your pig, all right? And then when it came time to give the pig away, you wouldn't want to give the pig away, and you definitely wouldn't want to eat your 4-H project, okay? Well, we matter to Jesus. Think about this. If we didn't, he would never bother to learn our names. We are not a project to Jesus. We are a person he desires a love relationship with. And then there's more to this particular I am statement. In verse 15, Jesus says these amazing words, I lay down my life for my sheep. I would never even consider dying for a sheep. Not even consider it. And I live in West Eugene, and there's a lot of sheep in the fields around our house. When I go on power walks and stuff, I see sheep all the time. If I was walking by one of these flocks of sheep and I saw a cougar in there attacking a helpless little sheep, I wouldn't even slow down. I would not think, I'm going to go rescue that sheep. In my mind, I would just think, poor little lamb chop, sorry, your number's up. Circle of life, you know, and keep walking. I am not going to risk my life for a sheep. They're just not that important to me, all right? I realize, though, that Jesus died for us, and that shows us that we matter, and that's amazing. I'm currently rewatching the BBC series Sherlock with Benjamin Cumberbatch, and spoiler alert, towards the end of the last season, at one point near the end of the very last episode, a friend of Sherlock's named Mary steps in front of a bullet that was meant for Sherlock, and she dies. She dies for him to save his life, and Sherlock is blown away by this unselfish act of love. He just doesn't even know how to, like, think about it, and he's just staring off into space, and then he says these words, which I'll put on the screen. In saving my life, she conferred a value on it, and it's a currency that I do not know how to spend. Oh, I thought, wow, that is so true. In dying on the cross, Jesus conferred a great value on our lives. We matter. We matter that much. But unlike Sherlock, the good news is we know how to spend that currency. We get to go out into all of the world and show other people how much they matter. That's how we get to pay that value off. That's how we get to spend that currency. A few years ago, it was about 5 years ago, at the Museum of Modern Art in New York, they had this amazing display by the performance artist named Marina Abramović. And it was called The Artist is Present, and she was the creator of it. And it was a very simple display in this amazing museum of art. There was a simple wooden chair, and in about 3 feet in front of it, another wooden chair. And she would come out in this beautiful, full-length gown and sit in the chair and bow her head and close her eyes. And then one at a time, people going through the museum would sit in the chair in front of her. And then she would open her eyes, lift up her head, and look at them. And there was no touching, no talking, no gestures. She would just focus her full attention on the person in front of her for 15 minutes. 15 minutes. It became a wildly a popular attraction at this museum. People from all over the world came to participate in this display of art. People would line up on the sidewalks around the block. They'd spend the night even to get in, all just to be seen by Marina. And she talks about it when she was interviewed and said, it was such a powerful experience for me. I could actually sense what the people were going through. I could sense their pain, their joy, their hurt. And it was moving for the people that sat in the chair. They were surprised at how connected they felt to Marina in just this short period of time without the use of touch or words. And when they left that 15 minutes, they had this sense of incredible worth and value. Isn't that great? That's so like Jesus, our good shepherd. Without touch and oftentimes without words, if we'll sit still long enough and contemplate Jesus, we will sense this connection with Jesus. And through that connection, we'll rediscover our worth. We'll know we're valuable, that we matter. We'll just know we know. Now let's move on to the last I am statement. Jesus says, I am the resurrection and the life. And he says this at the funeral of one of his close friends, Lazarus. Funerals tend to bring up one of our greatest fears in life, our fear of death. Everybody has it. If you don't have it, you're special. Okay, so good for you. And most people that I talk to deal with the reality of death simply by denying death even exists. They just deny it away. Jim Hannigan, the comedian, he does a great bit on denial, but he uses not death, but hotel towels. He says, we're all in denial about the fact that hundreds of strangers have used this hotel towel before we have, and they've used it to dry off their bodies, all of their bodies. But no, we're in denial, and we just imagine that they used it just to dry off their elbows or something like that. And the moment we step into a hotel room, the denial begins. Because the truth is, if a stranger broke into our house and in the middle of burgling us decided, hey, I need a shower, and got in the shower and took a shower and dried off his entire body with that towel, we would have a completely different reaction to that towel, wouldn't we? I don't know if you're like me, total germaphobe, and I would look at the towel and I think, a burglar broke in, stole our stuff, and took a shower and used my towel, my instant thought would, you know, that's gotta go then. Burn it. In fact, burn the shower, okay? Or, and we're selling the house, by the way, that kind of thing. Personally, I actually don't use denial anymore in dealing with death. I think that's because the older you get, the more you think about it, and the older you get, the more funerals you have to go to. That's just the reality of life. There are a couple of things that I practice that help me deal with the reality of death. Two of them are good and you'll want to copy them. One of them not so much, but it helps me, and I thought I'd share it with you anyway. The first one, not so great, but this really helps me deal with the reality of death. Remembering that everybody else is gonna die too. I know that's horrible, and I sound like a horrible human being, but as I'm looking in this room and I'm going, yeah, I'm gonna die, but so are they, that kind of helps me. I mean, all of our voyages end in disaster, right? It just really comforts me to know that I'm not the only passenger on the Titanic. And in fact, I'm going golfing with two guys later this week. They're both older than me. And sometimes, honestly, when I'm thinking about my friends that are older than me, I think, oh, not only are they gonna die like me, but they're probably gonna go first. And that really helps me. That is horrible. I'm a horrible human being, but it helps me. If it helps you, you can adopt that practice. But I'll give you two better ones. This story really helps me. It's about a priest, true story actually, about a priest and his 92-year-old mother, and she was in hospice. And he was sitting with her as she died. And at the moment she died, he wrote this, and I'll put his words up on the screen. This is so great. At exactly noon, she opened her eyes, lifted her head some, let out a wondrous gasp, and left us. And no one within earshot of the sound would ever fear death again. I've read that story to myself I don't know how many times when I start getting freaked out about death. I thought, she's 92, but she's on the precipice of death. She knew she was dying, and she was taking her last breath, and the gasp, as he goes on to describe it, was this gasp of joy, like she was about to go skydiving. She was excited. And I thought, she wasn't afraid of death. Maybe I don't have to be either. But here's the biggie. The thing that I find most helpful is the words of Jesus we read today. I am the resurrection and the life. These words bring comfort and courage to me for several reasons. First of all, these words were spoken at a funeral. So here's a group of people that are totally focused on death, because that's what you do at a funeral, right? And Jesus gets them to think about life. That's incredible. Jesus made sure life got top billing right now. It's as if he was saying to them, look, I know death's a thing, but it's not the thing. Life is. I love that. It helps me so much not to freak out about death when I focus my attention on being fully alive and living out every day to the fullest. That helps me not freak out about death. I've heard that most of the people that are really afraid of death are really afraid of the fact that they never really lived. Oh, that's so true. But his words also let me know an important truth. Resurrection isn't just an experience we have, it's a person. Jesus says, I am the resurrection. So there'll be a familiarity with me, present with me, in the unfamiliarity of death. And it's Jesus. That helps me because death is this scary unknown mystery. But in the midst of this scary unknown mystery, there is something known, and it's Jesus. And that comforts me. I love roller coasters. The higher, the faster, the more loops, the better. And yet they terrify me at the same time. But you know what helps? I don't go on them alone. I went on one alone. I'm never doing that again. I always go with another person because in this mystery of how scary is this going to be? Are we going to fall? How many loops are there? How fast is it going to go? All these unknown. I want to have the known. Well, my wife's right here. That helps. I know that when I go through death, it's going to be a lot of mystery, but there's going to be a known. Jesus, because he is the resurrection. There's still so much mystery when it comes to death. It totally bugs me. I wish I had it all figured out. I really do. But when you think about it, there's a lot of mystery at the beginning of our lives too. When we're born, there's so many questions. Well, what is the name of this child going to be? What are they going to do? Where are they going to live? All this mystery. We embrace the mystery at the beginning of our lives. Now we just need to embrace the mystery at the end of our lives. That same 92-year-old woman that I told you about, when she found out she had terminal cancer, you know what her first words were? Wow, I've never done this before. That's amazing to me. She was actually looking forward to death. She lived this great life and was like going, this is the next big adventure to me. Here we go. And one time she woke up from a nap and she thought she died and woke up and she hadn't died. And she goes, oh, and I won't tell you what she said. She was mad that she hadn't died yet. That's impressive. That's a great way to look at it. The super odd thing about death to me is this. It's actually a gift to us because it's only in facing our mortality that we're truly alive. I'm going to tell a story I told you not too long ago. I'm not having a senior moment. I have a few of those nowadays, but this isn't one of them. There's a musician, and his name's Warren Zevon. Most of you have never heard about him, but he wrote the song Werewolf in London, which is super cool, so check it out yourself. And he got diagnosed with stage 4 cancer. And during this time, he had the courage to be interviewed on the David Letterman show. And David Letterman did a brilliant job in this interview. He looked at Warren, and he didn't dodge the elephant in the room. He knew Warren had terminal cancer, and he said, Warren, from your perspective of being terminally ill, is there something about life I don't know? Is there something about life that you can tell us? Well, that's a great question. And Warren's response was one of my favorite responses to a question about death I've ever heard. He just simply said this, well, this is what I know. I know how much you're supposed to enjoy every sandwich. Remember me telling you that? That was his response to this question. I love that because Warren, in facing death, had become more fully alive. That's what he was saying with that statement, and we will too. So maybe some of you have some of these fears that I have, the fear of bad stuff happening, the fear of being insignificant, the fear of death. But we can all be thankful for these I am statements of Jesus. I am the gate. I am the good shepherd. I am the resurrection and the life. Brandy's going to come up and give us two great announcements in a second, but we're going to end, and as she comes up, go ahead and stand with me, and we're going to pray together a very ancient prayer. This comes from like the 3rd or 4th century, and I want you to pray it out loud because it has to do with the words that I preached to you today. So let's just read this together. Let's pop this up on the screen. That you think of me, know me by name, guide and call me, within the vastness of this world and the universe beyond is a thing of wonder. That I hear your voice, feel your presence in a moment of time, in a whispered prayer, speaks of your love and my true worth, draws me ever closer, Creator God, to to you. Can we say amen to that? If you want a copy of that, I'll send it to you. So just let me know. I'll text it to you. But Brandy, make some announcements for us.